Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast supported by O'Neill and Fit for Racing. If you're looking for an in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the place to be. O'Neill kit out some of the world's top riders, including last week's guest Greg Minnaar. I spent most of last winter in O'Neill's Legacy pants and I really like them. They're lightweight, comfortable and have a good couple of pockets for your phone and your wallet. And despite not being waterproof, they fare pretty well when it's damp out there. O'Neill have kindly provided us with 10 pairs of their Legacy pants to give away. All you need to do is to be on our mailing list before the end of October and we'll pick 10 of you at random to win a pair of these awesome pants. To join our mailing list, head to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe and you'll find a form to fill out. Once you've done that, you'll get an email that you need to open and confirm your subscription, so don't forget to check your junk mail. We won't send you loads of emails or share your details with anyone, but you will get our brand new weekend warm-up email every Friday with some interesting bike-related stuff to look at and get stoked for a weekend on the trails. You can check out all that O'Neill has to offer by heading to O'Neill.com. This week on the podcast, I'm joined by Johnny Thompson from Fit for Racing to talk about off-season training. We cover loads of topics, including how to approach putting together your own plan, the potential benefits of fasted training, how simplification can help you achieve more, how to spot the signs of overtraining, and plenty more. Johnny's put together a really useful video for you that explains the importance of ankle mobility and specifically dorsiflexion for riding and shows you how to improve it. You can find that along with the other resources we discussed like Russian charts, the Wendler 531 program and loads of free sample workouts over at fitforracing.com. And there's also a page which is dedicated to the episode over there, which is fitforracing.com/downtime-podcast-feature. That's fit, then the number 4, then racing.com. All the links you need are also in the episode show notes over on our website, downtimepodcast.com, if that's easier for you. For you downtime listeners, Johnny is offering 50% off your first month on the program until the 29th of November by using the code downtime50 at the checkout. That's downtime, all lowercase, followed by the number 50. That way you can give it a try and see if it works for you. They aren't one of these companies who make it hard for you to cancel your program, so if it isn't right for you, then don't worry, they'll sort you out. As always, be sensible if you're getting into training, look after yourself, stay safe, and get advice from the professionals when needed. Right, time to get into this episode. So without further ado, here's Johnny Thompson. Johnny Thompson, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast.
Hi, Chris.
How's
glad,
it going?
Glad to be back. Very excited to be back, actually.
Good stuff.
Been a little while.
It has been a while, yeah. So for people that maybe haven't listened to previous episodes with you, just remind us or let us know who you are and what you do.
I am Johnny Thompson, off-road bike sports coach. That was a mouthful. I'm glad that came out all right. In a nutshell, I used to ride a bit. I did a fair bit of CrossFit. I opened a CrossFit gym. Then I trained some riders. And now I do primarily an online training program called Fit for Racing. Mm-hmm. So over the time of training riding and training riders, I've kind of, I sound like an American on an infomercial, developed this crazy system that will skyrocket your performance. Basically seeing common areas of improvement through strength and conditioning that can really help mountain bikers, yeah. Motocrossers and hard enduro guys, mountain bike enduro.
Yeah.
So we specialize in 4 sports only. So I've trained professional athletes in other domains, but with the development of Fit for Racing, I'm focusing all my efforts here.
Yeah.
So I've kind of let them go, unfortunately. I will maybe bring them back in the future. But for now, it's like a real focus on how far can we push strength and conditioning for bike sports athletes.
Yeah.
Because in the past, I have seen there's been a massive gap. And not a gap in the market necessarily, but a gap in training for these semi-professional, full professional, amateur riders. And that, you know, we've realized that it doesn't take that much time to train really well, to really benefit on the bike.
Yeah.
And there's a big misconception that these pro riders spend all of their days training. And I see on the YouTube videos that we put out and on Pink Bike things, you know, oh, that's fine, but you know, Adam Brayton's this way because he spends all day every day training. But I can guarantee that he doesn't train more than 3 hours a week in here.
Right.
If he does anything at home, that'll contribute to his 3 times a week. Sometimes it'll be 4, but it'll be like a more of a recovery session.
Yeah.
Albeit he's out on the bike a lot, but that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is that we don't want you to be in the gym and miss out on time on the bike. So for the pro athletes, that is get in, do an hour of very purposeful, targeted work for performance, specifically for riding.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put any fluff in there that's unnecessary. We don't ask them to do things that are really laborious and time-consuming. And that's enough for them to keep the head on the ride and not in the gym.
Yeah.
See it as a chore, let's say.
Cool.
But that, amazingly, reflects on the needs of the office worker parent that only rides at weekends, that already goes to a gym. And they might be in the gym 5 days a week. So they're already, time-wise, doing more than some of these professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
But without the focus and direction to really help their riding.
Got you.
So that's kind of the birth of the online Fit for Racing program.
Makes sense. Good introduction.
Wow.
We're done.
That's what happens when you have a strong coffee just before you go.
Excellent. Well, it's that time of year again, right? So many races now are heading into off season, and we're going to dig into that a little bit and look at kind of how to make the most of it. But first off, like, not everyone's a racer for starters. Definitely not everyone's a pro racer.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still a benefit of having an kind of inverted commas off season?
Yeah, so we saw this a lot in CrossFit as well in the early days. You know, I've been doing CrossFit, coaching CrossFit for over 10 years. And in the early days, it was this thing around general physical preparedness. So you might have seen quotes on Instagram and stuff, better than yesterday. And we don't particularly like that because that would suggest that every day you're doing a little bit quicker or a little bit heavier,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't account for any kind of cycling of activity or load. And so for riders, we see often that they'll take a couple of months off because the season's been so intense and there's so much going on beyond riding, the travel and all of the commitments that they have around a busy season. They literally just want some headspace. But for an amateur rider, they might be in this flow where they're riding every weekend year round. They're not getting the volume on the bike. They don't have to travel as far to get these rides in, mm-hmm. like 3 or 4 times a week. But still, some variance within that annual, structure helps keep people keen.
Yeah.
So if you rode the same track every day for all of your life, you might be the best on that track. You get come to another track, you don't know, you'll have a really good time, but you might not be the best.
Yeah.
So the idea is to be spinning these plates, but focus changes through the season.
Okay.
So for an amateur rider to take full time off, I'd say don't do that.
Okay.
Shift your focus. The end of the summer has come, you might not be on your bike as much. So a good shift of focus may well be you do more gym work.
Okay.
You focus on strength before Christmas. You add capacity early next year, and then you're ready to be the best rider next year. But don't replace the riding opportunities with the gym.
Okay.
So because that might then reduce to once a week, once a fortnight, you still want to take those opportunities to be out riding because that's what you love. That's why you listen to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're listening to me trying to tell you how to be a better rider.
Yeah.
But for the pros, what you really don't want it to be is a job and something that they do because that's what they have to do. So you see most of the pro riders now, they're looking to have fun again. They got into riding because it was fun. When they got better at riding, it was more fun. And then they got sponsorships, it became a job, and there's lots of pressure on them. So performance on the track, if you put that pressure on results, which is out of your control, stiffens you up and is a direct reflection on your poor performance, sometimes basic pressure. So this is why the pro riders like to take this time off so they can come back fresh and keen. They'll reload, get that feel back. And often that is, for them, pushing focus into the gym.
Yeah, cool. So let's assume then that we're gonna spend a little bit of time in this part of the year
looking to improve ourselves and get better in time for when the weather improves next summer, if that happens. So let's maybe start off with kind of diagnostics then. So a lot of us will be carrying, I don't know, injuries or mobility issues or niggles.
Niggles, exactly. Yeah.
Are there certain things we can do to help us get a feel for that, like where we're at from some of those things? Are there particular, I don't know, movement screens or things that we can try to give us a feel for, are there any underlying issues we should be tackling before we go headlong into a heavy winter of gym work or riding, whatever that happens
absolutely.
To be?
Yeah. So this focus shifting should be, when it comes out of the summer, really realigning with good functional, inverted commas, I hate that word because it's overused, but let's say human movement done well. So you want to see if you can squat well, you can lunge well, you can press overhead without any uncomfortable pressures, muscles, and any acute pain. So if you've got niggles, what you want to do is really move around and identify where they are, what's causing them. Is it mobility issue? Is it an underlying impact injury that you've had over the season that you haven't dealt with? Mm-hmm. Is it simply because you sit down all day and you've got tight hip flexors and that affects your lower back and that kind of thing? So it's really aligning yourself with how you move, where your limitations are, and then looking into specific things to improve what we'll call red flag areas.
Okay.
So what we'll do is, in association with the podcast, we will give you an example of something that will really help your ankle mobility, which we know, you might not know, but I'm telling you now, is going to be very effective for improvement in your ankle, dorsiflexion specifically. So your knee over your toe will help your riding, but also will help the work in the gym and help you in positions. That means that you can add performance and weight to a better mechanically perform squat, let's say, or deadlift and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what we do on the program is send a mobility screening so you can identify all areas specifically for, identifying red flag areas first, so you can spend more time on those because you want quick wins.
Yeah.
You want to be able to improve those, but then like a holistic screening so you can work on with associated movements, improving all of your mobility. Okay.
So how, give us an example then. I mean, you talked about ankle dorsiflexion, so that's your toe towards your knee effectively.
Yeah.
How does a limitation or poor ankle flexibility impact your riding?
So if you imagine when your foot's on the pedal, particularly on your back foot, when we see like bottoming out on your suspension, then your body then becomes the suspension because you have none left. In essence, it all works together as one machine. So you and the bike, they're compressing. Mm-hmm. And that starts on the ankle. Ankle and hands, these are your connections to the mechanical suspension. So as soon as that pressure comes through your ankle, if you're limited with that dorsiflexion and your knee can't come forwards, then that's one part of the system that is then limited in the impact that it can absorb.
Yeah.
But it also, more importantly, affects the mechanics everywhere up. So if you, say, did a squat and you couldn't push your knee beyond your toe, or even still, try and squat with a vertical shin and see that you end up very much over your hips and not between them. So mm-hmm. you're over your thighs, and the mechanics above are all really affected by simply your ankle mobility. And so that's why we're going to show this as a bang for buck, easy win that improve your ankle mobility, or identify where it is, improve it, then test yourself again in a couple of weeks, and then see how that affects your squat and hopefully you're riding. So whether you can identify that when you're on a trail, particular times, you're like, actually, yes, that has done me the world of good simply by focusing on that one area.
Yeah. So poor ankle flexion, that'll impact your entire ability to position yourself well on the bike and absorb impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Because imagine it's the foundation of where you're standing on your pedal. If that's limited somehow, then it will limit your positions everywhere above.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I get Laurie Greenland talked a bit this year about lowering his position on the bike. And I guess ankle flexion is part of that, being able to get down and kind of get your back flat.
Well, the only two things in play then are hips and ankles.
Yeah.
So we're talking ankles today, but hips are super important. And then we look up to upper mid back. You know, you're going to be in that hinge position that if you can't hinge well, your back, your chest is going to be high, and then something has to give. Yeah. And all of this mobility really does affect riding position and is important.
Yeah, cool. So we've got a good video coming in to help people on that, which is awesome.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit about kind of, I don't know, maybe at looking back over the summer or the race season or whatever, and analyzing your performance and how you feel about your riding and looking for gaps. What sort of things should people be kind of thinking about and looking at to I guess draw out, okay, here's some weaknesses and here's some things maybe I'll go away and try and work on over the winter?
So it depends on the level of rider, I guess. If you're a pro and you can look at positions on the bike through footage that you've accrued over the summer, you might be able to see some common areas that you can improve with mobility and practice on the bike in the off season.
Yeah.
For amateurs, more than likely, it will be simple, easy things to identify, like I can't handle my bike very well.
Okay.
When I'm landing, I feel like I can't confidently pull myself into a safe position, or fatigue, mm-hmm. which will probably be more common to identify, is my mates are all up ahead of me on a fire road climb and I'm gassing out, and that doesn't make me enjoy my ride very much. So these things are probably more easy to identify on the amateur level. On the pro level, performance-wise, physical performance, what we're saying is that we all kind of look for these minimum standards of performance for the upper level, and we hone that and we just keep those plates spinning so that the focus can be on the ride. So for them, we are eliminating all of that physical limitation, I guess.
Yeah.
So if there's a hole in your game at that level, I'd be surprised you'd be at that level.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
If there's something that you feel on the bike, you look at other people hitting the same line and dealing with body position differently to what you're capable of, mm-hmm. is likely going to be upper body strength and core over, say, hips.
Yeah.
In conjunction with mobility, as we discussed earlier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So the needs here are going to be the same, but different in scale.
Mm-hmm.
So the beginner athlete, they're out for a ride, likely they're going to be either strong and unfit or fit and not strong. And you'll be able to identify where you're kind of swaying towards that.
Yeah.
And that might make up some of your focus in the off season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I guess, and the program or the work that people would want to do for those two different types of rider that you've talked about there, fit and not strong, strong and not fit.
We'll call it relatively.
Yeah. They're going to want to look at slightly different ways of solving that, yeah?
Potentially. So this might be counterintuitive now, but with more of a seasonal approach for particularly downhill riders, mm-hmm. so with the mountain bike enduro program and the downhill, a lot of the stress is the same, yeah? But what we see is that enduro riders tend to ride more in the off season. Guys that specifically focus on downhill, they will take a bigger gap and they will hit it harder in the pre-season.
Right.
So what we want to do is a bit more of a general physical preparedness with a focus on strength and a little bit of a shift over the off season for the enduro rider, but a much bigger shift for the downhill rider. So we will focus on strength as a priority, regardless of where you feel your weak areas are, with some substitute inputs to kind of make up those deficits. Does that make sense? So there's options within the program, let's say, to focus, but the underlying program is going to be of raising strength that will then go into muscular endurance that will then, on the other end, make you a fitter rider and more capable over longer periods of time. But the strong rider still can make improvements there so that they're fitter on the other side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess so. So let's say I've done a bit of diagnosis on my body and maybe I've decided there's a few things I want to work on, like, you know, improving my ankle mobility or hip hinge or whatever it is. I've looked at the gaps in my riding and maybe I feel like I could be stronger or maybe I feel like I could be fitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in general, how would I go about building some kind of program for me for the winter? Yeah.
Okay. So I suppose if you visit the website Fit for Racing, you'll see the style of training that we do. It's multimodal domain training. So what we try and do is incorporate lots of things within the, let's call it the metabolic conditioning element. That conditioning element is what makes Fit for Racing unique, very good, take a lot less time than traditional types of training. But along with that, depending on the energy system that we're focusing on during that and what's either side of it, so core work and strength or intervals, then I suppose what I'm saying is if you can't dedicate yourself to a full program, visit the website and get an idea and a feel of the types of workouts and the things that we suggest you should be doing to improve strength and fitness at the same time.
Yeah.
But then aside from that, if you're only listening to this podcast and you don't ever visit the website, structuring a program around your personal needs, think about, do I need to be stronger? If it's a yes, don't simply focus on strength in the gym and then ride at weekends. This is the mistake that I made in my off seasons, was I would be in the gym working on strength, and then in the spring, I'd be slow as shit. I wouldn't be capable on my bike, and it would take a few months to then get bike fit. And it was only when I incorporated conditioning workouts into my off season that I found that actually coming back into the spring, I was better on my bike because I was more physically capable.
Yeah.
So it's all well and good doing squats and presses and deadlifts. And you see the guys on Pink Bike that love that shit, and they'll say that's all you need to do. Well, that's not very functional. And I've said it again. Functional in terms of what's the function of this movement? It is to build base strength to add other movements that will then help your riding.
Mm-hmm.
By just simply squatting might help your riding a little bit, but it doesn't have all of the additional benefits.
Yeah.
So focus on big compound movements, squats, deadlifts, presses, pulls. So double the amount of pulls as you do presses. That's really important.
Okay. What's the thinking behind that?
It's a common deficit that we see in riders, upper mid-back strength.
Okay.
Even on the pro level. So I've been talking to, I won't name drop him yet, but he identified himself an area of weakness that he says himself, to strengthen this would make me a better rider.
Mm-hmm.
His trainer didn't listen to that and didn't address it over the summer. So he's in a position now where he's identified a weakness. His trainer's not identified it or capitalized on that easy win, and he maybe could have done better this season. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So generally, upper mid-back strength deficit area. So what we've said there is pushes, pulls, squats, hinges, deadlifts, all of that strength stuff. And once you've done with that, simple five reps of five. So maybe work up to a heavy five and then do another four sets at 90% of what you got to. And that way you're getting some volume through, you're getting that strength base. It's important then that you do some conditioning, and this will also give you capacity on the other end. It will make your strength better.
Mm-hmm.
So the work that you put in at the start of the session will, you'll adapt to it better by doing a short, intense, heavy, or assault bike, super short workout that's going to, we call them intensity workouts. They're the ones that you hate. And a small percentage of people can really do them well. Most people can't feel that uncomfortable for that long. to get ultimate benefit. So it's a super test.
Yeah.
But by doing these things together, what we're doing is we're identifying and tackling the strength issue, as well as what is often undertrained, a short time domain capacity element. These contribute very well, complement each other very well. If you did a strength element, then went out for a 2-hour ride, there's a fair chance that that will take away some of the stuff that you've worked hard gaining on the strength element. Instead, we put in the thing that's undertrained, that complements, so you get stronger and you have that capacity. So then when you start working towards the pre-season and we have the medium and longer range elements that come in, they're already, you know, smaller parts of the puzzle that you've already filled in some of those blanks behind, and that will then contribute to lengthening your capacity that you've built a short, nice short engine for. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I guess worth pointing out then, people don't need to subscribe to your program, right? You're putting a load of content on the website that will show people all sorts of different kind of strength work and also what I think you're calling conditioning work. So the higher intensity, maybe slightly challenging, but very worthwhile stuff.
Yeah.
So if people go there, they can pick up some movements and they should be looking for a combination of pull, push, squat, hinge.
Yeah.
Is it twist?
Yeah. So that's so a traditional strength program, you would tick these boxes of twisting. Oh, it carries all of these things that will add into a conditioning workout so that you get, we'll call, assistance movements, but also contributing to your capacity and functionality on the bike.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So we're not doing a set and then resting 2 minutes for full recovery. We're doing a set and moving on to another muscle group and moving on so that the capacity, like a big superset, the capacity raises and your function raises as well. Does that make sense? So within that, we get a lot more of the dynamic movements, twisting, carries, all of these things, lunges, longer, more explosive work.
Okay.
And then maybe to finish, we'll do some core.
Yeah.
That's always important. And to be focusing on that core so you can be centered.
Yeah.
It's good to separate that from the intensity in the middle.
Okay. So that's, so if people are going to the site, those are the kind of areas they should be looking to combine from all of your kind of separate videos to create their own program as such.
So if you're going to create your own program, say with a lower body focus day in the conditioning, you might want to add in more of an upper body focus.
Okay.
So you might do squats as a part A, 5x5, as we said, heavy weight, lots of rest, test yourself, then rest a little bit. In the workout, you might want to complement what you've done in the squats with some higher volume lunges, maybe, or deadlifts, so a hinge, or kettlebell swings that are reasonably heavy with pulls and pushes. So the volume of the work would then be a focus on the upper body, because we know that you'll recover within a couple of days. And if you're only training 2 or 3 times a week, you can afford a full body workout, but not necessarily doing heavy squats and heavy presses and heavy hinges as a part A, because you want this. You don't want to be in the gym for 4 hours. And also, adding all of that volume around your body isn't going to be conducive for that ultimate strength gaining that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's a happy balance.
Okay. And then how often should we be looking to kind of change things up? Like if I just went and built myself a program and then just did it, you know, 3 times a week for the rest of the winter, is that a good thing, a bad thing? How often should I be looking to change that content?
Your body is very good at adapting to stresses. So it'll adapt and it'll do the minimum amount. And it'll basically stop making improvements after 2 or 3 weeks. And so changing it up often is really good. Well, what I'd say is changing it every single time. There are strength programs out there. Some of the strongest athletes in the world at Westside Barbell, they do a system that you probably couldn't even pinpoint, because every day is maxing out, but something different, over 1,000 movements.
Right.
You know, and the core is squat, deadlift, press, but around the assistance movements, it's this constant maxing out, maxing out, but different movements. What we don't want to do is just throw everything into a bucket and pull out what we're doing today, maxing that out. You know, it has to have a little bit of structure so that we're hitting all of the important areas. But say on squats, there's a fair chance that seeing that progression will motivate you.
Yeah.
But then cutting it off before you take a back step. So what we do is we do smaller cycles of 3 to 6 weeks on a particular area. And that may well be rowing intervals,
mm-hmm.
as well as things like squats, deadlifts, presses. They're subtle in some of the smaller movements, but they're very a part A on a Monday for 4 weeks is going to be squats. You'll have tested your squat 3 rep max. We'll give you percentages and numbers to hit on those to ultimately get the most out of that and then contribute with the conditioning that follows that squat
yeah.
at this part in the season.
So what, from a progression perspective then, kind of week on week, what, like, is there a percentage kind of weight increase I should be looking to try and achieve with what I'm doing?
So it's important that you don't max out simply because your mechanics will break down. So if you continually max lifts, it means that when you've maxed, you've failed.
Just when you say max, what do you mean? Like one rep?
So, yeah, one rep. As heavy as you can go. So yeah, we like to test 3 rep maxes because okay. the load is less then that when you do your testing at the start of a program, our program, you'll test a 3 rep max and then the risk of injury or risk of your mechanics breaking down are lessened. Does that make sense? On your 3rd rep because yeah. the load is less. So if you were doing, say, this conjugate style of West Side barbell, they just want the best power lifters in the world. And if you hurt yourself and you're out, it doesn't really matter to them because there's 20 guys that want to come through the door waiting. It's like the Bulgarian method. You know, you max, you snatch, and you clean jerk every single day. But there's 3,000 people start that. 2 people go to the Olympics. Right. That's all they want.
Yeah.
What we want is healthy athletes that move well and move better year on year so that they can ride well and better year yeah. on year. And for us, that safety is really important. So to get a 3 rep max, you can work out what would have been your 1 rep max, and then you can work on all of the Soviet percentage charts to basically get you a decent percentage of load in the volume that will ultimately get you strongest.
Right.
These things are easily found on the internet.
Yeah.
So the number of reps at what percentage you should be using, and then that'll give you an idea. Or some of these simple 531, Wendler 531. If you're new to a strength program, Google Wendler 531, follow it for 12 weeks, and then see where you're at.
Okay.
This is a super simple program, easily accessible. The percentages are there. You can probably get it on an app now. So you go into the gym, you do that as your strength, and then do some conditioning afterwards, see how you ride next year.
Yeah.
I'm basically telling people not to subscribe.
That's all good. But so, yeah, so two useful resources then, Russian yeah. chart. So we'll have to get a link to find
Yeah,
those.
Actually, yeah. Once we finish this, we'll find some links.
Yeah.
That'll be on the downtime page.
Yeah.
And you can follow those links, and then you can follow these programs that are super simple
yeah.
for beginner strength programs, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then I guess it's very hard for people that have never trained with a coach or don't train with a coach often to know whether they're working hard enough.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you see a lot of people in the gym effectively wasting their time because they're not really actually yeah. achieving a whole lot. And it's, you know, no one's got plenty of time these days. Everyone's short. So I guess a couple of things. How is there a way to explain how we should be looking to feel both kind of during the exercise, after a session, and then the next day to give people a feel for where they're trying to get to with this? Because there's no point yeah. in kind of not going hard enough, but equally there's no point in totally breaking yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is totally subjective, and it depends on how long you've trained, if at all, what kind of things you've done in the past. You could have worked an office job for 30 years and never picked up anything other than a shopping bag. And then you go in, I'm not expecting that you're going to be maxing out your deadlifts at double body weight and then doing 3,000 of them and then absolutely ruining yourself for a week. That's no good. So in the early stages, just see how you work on body weight only movements, squats. The deadlift, stay light and do sets of 10 to 15 mm-hmm. to get the movement ingrained. So it's important that you learn the movement well, but also see how that affects your soreness the day after and probably the day after that also. You will be sore regardless. On the upper level, does an athlete strive to be sore? Sometimes in the off season, yeah, it's a good reflection on how hard you pushed. Yeah. But it might just be a reflection on how often you've done that movement pattern. So it's not necessarily that you always strive to have that soreness.
Okay.
What we don't want is that people are sore 100% of the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So soreness as a gauge, it depends how much you handle. Okay. It depends where you're at in the off season, what your purpose is. And an element of soreness will be there. Like maybe you haven't been on your bike for a while. The day after, you can be sore.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good or bad? No, it's just a reflection on how your body's adapting and it sees it as a new stress.
Yeah.
And it's adapting to that stress. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So every now and again, waking up the next day feeling like you've done something is an indicator that maybe your level's about right. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like not every time you train, but.
Yeah. So I think a better indicator is your general fatigue, because training isn't going to be the only thing that's in your lifestyle that contributes to your ability to recover and function. So training will be a massive impact. It's a very stressful thing.
Yeah.
So we want to balance that with how much sleep you're having, what's your nutrition like, you know, how much caffeine do you need before a session so that you can reach that level. That kind of thing is like a good indicator of how that fits into the balance lifestyle and whether that's actually going to work for you or not. You know, how much do you have on your plate? How much soreness can you handle that takes that free will out of your everyday? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I wanted to talk about that. So there's, you know, certainly with athletes, we hear about overtraining issues, and that's actually probably even more relevant to people that don't have loads of time to rest because they're getting paid to do that. Which is most of us, and we all have daily stresses and a lot of things going on in our lives. So how do we avoid overtraining? What should we be looking out for?
So there's a famous quote, I don't know who said it first, but I like it, and it's not overtraining, it's under recovery. So these guys that have the time and the resources to recover well, they do it well, so they don't end up in this overtraining. So it's just important to manage fatigue. So it's no good. We do program, like we call them reload weeks. Traditionally, it would be called a deload week, where we reduce the weight. But we're kind of reloading, so we're trying new movements. So it's still exciting in this period where it might not be as testing on your central nervous system, your muscles.
Yeah.
It gives you time to recover. So that then the week after, say like your biking season where these pros are taking 2 months off, this week is in those 2 months off. They might go climbing, they might be surfing, they might be still doing activities that are different, but it keeps them fresh for going back in. Yeah. We do this every 3, 4, 5 weeks, wherever it fits in the program, is that time to learn, recover, and then hit strong. Okay. If that fatigue is too much before that week is scheduled. So if you've written your own program, you're doing the 5-3-1, you come to the final week and you're like, you're ratty with your wife. You can't do your chores at home because you're like, fuck, well, I need to be a better rider and I need to get to the gym. So I'm reserving my energy. I'm not mowing the lawn today because I need to get this done. Then that's around, right? Where are your priorities? How sustainable is that state of prioritizing the gym? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I suppose I've been trialing, and I maybe wasn't going to talk about it today because it's still in a trial period. A few of our athletes have really hurt themselves this year. Keith Farmer, Superbikes, broke both of his legs, both places, like bone shot out and everything. Crazy. And he's come back in the gym. He's like, right, I'm ready to smash it. Wasn't even 4 weeks. Wow. And he just wants to do something because these guys are just coiled springs. And so we've got a variable heart rate monitor that I've been using for meditation and some recovery. And I've given it to him so that he can take a morning readiness reading. And this variable heart rate basically will tell you how your body is coping with the stresses that are going on. So what we don't want to do, Keith, is have you on heavy upper body simply because your legs aren't capable at the moment and be fatiguing that system that is also helping your recovery.
Yeah.
So this is the balance that you need to find, that if you're mid-strength cycle, but you're recovering, are you going to hinder that recovery by adding more strength? Do you know what I mean? And yeah. Finding that balance. And without a variable heart rate monitor, I haven't done all of the testing yet, but I'm quite a believer so far, certainly for the meditation side. Without that, simply go off feel. And if you feel like shit and you feel an obligation that you have to get that work done, then start looking at the other things that will raise your recovery, not just take out the training.
Mm-hmm.
So nutrition first and sleep. How's your sleep? How's your nutrition?
Yeah.
If you're eating crap, because this is what tends to happen as well, is when you start getting tired, you start reaching for the things that your primal brain is telling you it needs in abundance.
Yeah.
But you'll drive by a McDonald's because you couldn't be bothered to make breakfast in the morning. But by the time you get to town, you're like, fuck, I need something, McDonald's and coffee. And then that starts that cycle that isn't going to be helping your recovery. And then you end up in this big deficit. So balance, I guess.
Yeah. So being aware of that, how you're feeling on a daily basis, and not being a slave to the plan, because the plan doesn't take account of your other life stresses.
Exactly.
So the plan in itself, whether you've created it or you've contacted a professional or you're working with Fit for Racing, that plan doesn't know how you feel. So just because it says you've got to go to the gym and do X, Y, and Z.
Exactly.
You need to be cognizant of how you're feeling.
So on the program, we film demonstrations for each of the days every single week. It's new. So every Sunday, we send 4 workouts. And within those 4, we call 2 of them essential.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that pretty much anyone could work out on, say, a Monday and a Thursday. There's plenty of recovery in between. In 3 to 4 weeks, sequentially, to then take a deload week and recover.
Yeah.
Managing that volume, so adding day 3 and 4 and potentially additional work that we put as an option depending on your need, all of that is variable depending on how you recover.
Yeah.
Simply, if you don't recover, there's no point in putting more work in, because the work that you have done then isn't purposeful work and you're taking away some of the benefits of it.
Yeah. And if you're not recovering well and you feel like you're struggling to get to stuff, then looking at life stresses and sleep and nutrition, I guess, are the kind of 3 things to be trying to manage and improve.
Which is really hard. I mean, I've got a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, and it's difficult to say, right, I need to sleep more.
Yeah.
Say to my wife, I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock, then that's the only time I get to spend with her, which is not cool. So instead, I'm like, well, what can I do in the time I do have? And that is, every morning I have the same breakfast. Well, that's a lie. I have a combination of 1 of 2 breakfasts, depending on what I'm going to be doing.
Okay.
Which we might get into. That means that because I always have it, I don't have to give it any thought. And I don't leave the door without breakfast and then succumb to temptation.
Yeah, okay, so simplifying some of those things in life.
It's like the old analogy of, why is it when you're in prison you get super strong? Because everything else is taken away from you. You don't have to think about when you go to sleep, when you eat. All you have to think about is the training.
Yeah.
So the more things you can free up your mental capacity by doing and making into a routine, then the better it will be to stick to that routine.
Mm-hmm.
So breakfast is a number one. If you can get a routine of that, do it. And then a month down the line, think, right, maybe I get hungry 10, 11 o'clock. And that's a time where I might have a chocolate bar. Then always put something in your bag to take to work for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of work your way up. So for me personally, I have very little control over what I eat in the evening. So I don't let that take my mental capacity by looking at the food on the table, being like, you're a shit wife. You know, I'm really tired today and I need to be nailing down my nutrition. You know, what's this cottage pie all about?
Yeah.
So I just don't allow that to take any of my mind other than gratitude.
Yeah.
So I eat whatever's on the table. I'm very happy about that because the rest of the time when I'm at work and I'm out of the house, I've prepared and made a routine of those things that help my recovery.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. So what are the two breakfasts and how do you decide which of the two you're going to eat?
It's either going to be a carb heavy breakfast or a carb zero-ish breakfast.
Okay.
So speaking with KJ Sharp, Nutrition Savvy. So we did a little video. It was a long one. It was probably pretty hard to watch. Not my proudest video.
Okay.
But in there, we were talking about fasted cardio and fasted in the sense of a no-carb breakfast mm-hmm. before doing a sub-max heart rate cardio session. So I've been trialing to see how I feel on 2, sometimes 3 times a week, having a protein and fat only breakfast, then doing steady state cardio at 60 to 70% heart rate max for up to 60 minutes, and then training only heavy and short intense in the evening, but having probably during that day a little bit more carbs total.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. So what would the breakfast be?
Yeah, I suppose that question was. Yeah. So specifically, I'll have 3 eggs with chorizo and some spinach.
Okay.
In a scromlet.
Yeah.
Scrambled egg.
A messy omelet.
Yeah, when people say, I don't have time for that, honestly, it takes about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I turn the pan on super hot. I get a flat spatula. I put the chorizo in that's in the freezer, already chopped, throw it in. As that sizzles, there's enough fat in there for the eggs not to stick. Crack the 3 eggs in, spinach as well. And you literally just stir it until it's ready.
Yeah.
Put it on your plate. That's that.
Boom. And what's the theory behind the fasted element?
So it's to see how I feel. KJ's advice was that it can take up to 6 months. You can make benefits in being, inverted commas, fat adapted.
Okay.
So I know that previously when I was a CrossFit wanker and I did Paleo Zone and it was all about, or Paleo specifically, I didn't do Zone then, it was very hard to get carbohydrates in. But I felt reasonably good uh-huh. on a higher fat diet. And I suspect that looking back, I was a lot more fat adapted.
Okay.
If that's even a thing.
Right.
So at the moment, I'm trying to kind of dissect it and see how my longer performance is after maybe up to 6 months. I'm about 2 months into this.
Yeah.
6 months, where am I going to sit without changing much else about my training and nutrition?
Okay.
See how I feel after 6 months.
So the theory being that your body gets better at burning fat for energy rather than sugars, hence carbohydrates.
Exactly.
And therefore your endurance improves because you can only fit so much sugars in your body, but you've got a fat store.
Exactly that. Which will be very good for enduro riders.
Yeah.
And people that maybe once a year go on a week-long holiday to Morzine, and then on day 3 they're absolutely wrecked.
Yeah.
So once that fat adaption occurs, you're probably going to be more sensitive to carbohydrate as well, which I think is a really good performance-enhancing tool. So for really important races for these top-level guys, what I suggest is cycling off sugars
mm-hmm.
and caffeine and using it as a legal performance enhancer.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so desensitizing the body a little bit by coming off it for a period and then using it around a race event to
exactly.
peak yourself.
But can we magnify that by being more fat adapted?
Right.
So on the other end, all I'm really doing is seeing if I can get super high off food.
Okay. Yeah.
I am an addict in every sense, and what I'm doing now is just making sure that I have the best party in 6 months' time, because I'll have had no caffeine, little sugars, I'll be super fat adapted.
Right.
And then I'll take my bike out for a ride with a double espresso and a boost bar.
Yeah.
And see how I do.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so rather than doing that every day or every time you train,
yeah,
using it selectively.
Well, I have the part of the reason why I'm doing this is because I did find that I was very reliant on caffeine and sugar, particularly on day-to-day workouts. So it's important to understand that it's good as a tool. So a guy sitting at a desk listening to this is about to go to the gym. You know, he gets into a routine of having a double espresso on a boost bar. That then becomes a thing that in 2 months' time, he needs that to train. And then what do you take?
Yeah, yeah.
You start on pre-workouts and these things are off the shelf. And that's just not going to help. What we're talking about, the recovery, this spike in the sugar and all of these stimulants aren't going to help that nice lifestyle kind of holistic approach, let's say.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does.
So when I was starting to feel like I was reliant on it, then I knew I had a problem, much like an alcoholic.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
What's your carbohydrate breakfast and when would you consume that?
Exactly the same, but with a bagel.
Okay.
The toasted bagel.
Yeah.
So the bagel can be toasting. I'll do the eggs exactly the same. And I just simply put the bagel on the side.
Yeah.
So it takes me no more time. Well, probably like 30 seconds difference. And I just know that those eggs are cooked the same way. And I don't have to think about anything other than, do I put a bagel in today or do I not? And it's always in stock.
Yeah.
My wife, I can thank for. She keeps that stocked. She knows I always have the same breakfast. That's that.
Boom. And so the carb breakfast would be when you're not going to do a fasted cardio session. You're going to do some lifting or something a bit heavier, higher intensity.
Yeah. So it's important to have carbohydrates for lifting higher intensity work. So at this part in the season, so when we're looking at strength gaining, it's not necessarily going to do you right to be doing a fully fat adapted cycle of nutrition and lower output cardio. So when we're looking ultimately to get super strong and fast and explosive, that's going to be primarily fueled by carbohydrates.
Okay.
So for that, around, and this is really important as well, is after training, when people talk about recovery, having, and I think quite a lot of it is around marketing of protein shakes.
Yeah.
Because how often do you have access to easily digestible protein within 20 minutes of training?
Yeah.
You know, so the kind of made up this thing, like whey protein was super cheap. It was like a byproduct that we get rid of. Let's put that into a shake, make bodybuilders believe that they'll lose all the gains if they don't have it. It's fucking genius.
Yeah, it's good marketing.
Yeah, brilliant. But I suppose in there, there's some efficacy in getting some proteins, but importantly, not as they'll make you believe, the super secret transport agent, pure carbs. Sugar, to transport the protein straight to your muscles. The sugar is really good for spiking your insulin, which does help that recovery process, but also it numbs your stress hormone, cortisol. So it's very stressful to do these workouts. Strength training in general is stressful on that system. So what we want to do is numb that quickly, so then it can get on with recovery.
Okay.
So sugar is really good for that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So creating routine is a good way of kind of saving time in the day. What about warm up and cool down? It's kind of controversial, but can we cut that out? Can we minimize that to get more of our time spent doing meaningful exercise?
So generally, the rule is that the longer it is, the workout, then the less warm up you need. So if it's lighter, longer, you don't need as much. If it's heavier, say if it's a max lift, a 3 rep, something like that, warm up, super essential. So you want to hit all of the positions that you're going to be in during those movements or that movement.
Yeah.
And beyond, to ultimately make your mechanics suitable for safe lifts.
Okay.
And then incremental weights on the way up. If you're super stuck for time and you want to get in the gym and you want to lift something heavy, then don't go to a maximum weight. And instead of a warm-up, do multiple lighter sets of that movement.
Work your way up.
So this is something that I don't suggest you should do all of the time. But if you are cramming it, and say you're going to do some deadlifts, you can go in, you can do a set of 20 with a free bar with no weight on, put the bar down, and in that recovery time, then you can hold a lunge position and push your knee out, both sides, and then get back on with, say, 10 plates on. So you're doing a 40 kilo for 15 reps.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you'd done all of your mobility first, you could probably start on something a little heavier and fewer reps. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And what about the cool down element of it? Is that...
So cool down, you can just leave the gym and get on with your life.
Okay.
But it depends, if you make a routine around it, it will benefit your overall mobility and recovery. If you not necessarily do this, like, I'm going to let my heart rate come down by sitting on an elliptical trainer for 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
but get straight into the mobility, purposeful work that's going to improve your mechanics.
Got you.
That will be way more helpful than, inverted commas, letting your heart rate drop steadily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
But if you can't have that and you do your final set of squats and you've done 10 seconds 10 times on the assault bike and you're absolutely wrecked, recovery is just going to be lying down for 10 minutes.
Yeah, fair.
Then you're like, shit, I need to get back for my tea. Hop up, run out, do mobility as a standalone thing when you have time. So here's a good tip. If you like to sit with your partner and watch box sets in the evening, it'll only take about a month before they accept the fact that when you watch an hour-long program, you're on a foam roller.
Okay.
It's awkward to start with. You have to explain a little bit. But what you're doing, you're watching and you're paying attention and you're just going through something that then could become a routine. And that habit, that thing that you do, that's going to make such a massive difference, but it doesn't really take out anything else from your day.
Yeah.
Because that's your chill out time. It doesn't have to be aggressive. You don't have to be following a mobility program. Just get on a roller and don't be going backwards by sitting down in a hunch position for an hour. Be opening out, rolling your quads and your calves, help your dorsiflexion.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things that you get into a little flow and you'll see yourself the difference of days. You do different things depending on where you're tight.
Mm-hmm.
And that is then specifically targeting areas of tightness whilst not taking any time out of your day
that
you would normally be spent watching Narcos.
Yeah, fair play.
Pretty decent.
Yeah. So for people that don't know, just briefly explain foam rolling.
So foam rolling, amongst other things, really good. So imagine you went to a sports massage professional and they're going to loosen up some glued together sliding surfaces between your muscles.
Mm-hmm.
It can also increase blood flow. So these rollers, you get knobbly ones, you get soft ones, you get hard ones, whatever works for you. I used to actually use a piece of soil pipe because I liked it hard.
Right, fair enough.
And I could vary the amount by the amount of weight that I put on. So rather than going super soft and having to push down on it, go hard and then just put less weight on.
Yeah.
So foam rolling staying off joints and tendons. So say if you're doing your calf, you wouldn't go onto your Achilles tendon. If you have a problem with that tension in there, foam rolling your calf can loosen it off without holding a stretch, which would add more strain on the tendon that you're trying to recover.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So just rolling, 20 passes on one area, and then just change the angle, 20 passes up and down, change the angle, 20 passes, and just do your whole body.
Yeah,
I used to have a rolling pin when I had an office job, and I just roll my forearms and triceps all day, and just be in a constant state of moving. And it can be subtle. If your boss is like, "What the fuck are you doing?" You're like, "I'm just sitting on a lacrosse ball. I am also working."
Yeah, so you can do stuff. I've got a lacrosse ball under my desk and I often just roll my on the soles of my feet. And
the best position is the next one.
Right.
So whenever you're in a state where you're in the same position, particularly sitting at a desk, if you're there 8 hours a day, say, right, I must start this mobility. Why am I not getting any better? Because for 20 years, you've got worse for 8 hours a day. You can't expect to reverse that in a couple of hours a week. If you spend that time at your desk doing some purposeful mobility, whilst not getting sacked, then you may as well do it, even if it's on a break, you know.
Yeah.
Just be aware, you know, a rolling pin. I think I did an Insta banger video, 1 minute video on using a seat post, which probably isn't ideal, but you know, it's bike relevant.
Yeah.
Instead, use a rolling pin and then you can stick it down your back and you can really get some leverage onto the shoulder blades while sitting at your desk. Yeah. And your traps get super tight, give you tension headaches. They reduce the functionality of your shoulder. If your traps, then, you know, they're tight and positionally, it's not great for you. Yeah. So all these things you can contribute to your performance whilst technically you're doing things that you would be doing every day anyway.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time.
Wow.
we've got one new question that we've added to the end. So we've never asked you this one before.
Right.
What's one thing you do every day that you think benefits you? And you've probably already mentioned like three or four, but...
Well, yeah, the breakfast... I'll think of something new, but definitely do the same breakfast every single day.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be good for you nutritionally.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good for your mind. Having a routine is super good. So it frees up mental capacity elsewhere. So you can focus on things that need the focus. When you spread that focus throughout the whole day, you do everything half-assed. So eliminating that with a breakfast, number one for sure. Every day, I don't do mobility every day.
Okay.
I suppose in some sense I do. So I can't suggest that that's the best thing for listeners to do. I'd like to say that I meditate every day for at least 5 minutes, but I don't. Maybe you could say, like the constantly varied training that we do, I constantly vary... I'm making shit up because I do something different every day that benefits me. That's what I do. No. Does that even fit? No. I'm going to stick with the breakfast because for me, that's the most important and valuable thing. And that is genuinely the thing that I do every day.
It sets you up well, doesn't it, as well? Getting set and getting going quickly in the day, kind of, if you're efficient from the start, maybe you'll carry on being efficient throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And it, you know, it might take you a month to get into that habit. And it might seem like it's taking longer than normal. But I shit you not, having that breakfast over a bowl of cereal, you know, that's going to change you for the rest of the day and into the coming months.
Yeah.
Recovery, mind, freeing space, be way better.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. If people want to find out more, where should they look?
So fitforracing.com. So it's fit with the number 4 racing.com.
Cool.
So I suppose I should put a caveat on the name. So once upon a time, I went on a website and I looked for a name that would fit what I wanted to do with riders.
Yeah.
And Fit for Racing was available. Thought, yeah, I can make a logo out of that. So I bought it. In retrospect, after lots of messages saying, well, this is only for pro riders, it does sound quite elitist.
Okay.
But it's absolutely not that. Although we train some of the best riders in the world, the majority of the people that are following these programs are complete beginners. Well, not complete beginners to the gym. The majority aren't. Some are.
Yeah.
But they are amateur riders that are looking to add purpose and direction to what they're probably already trying to do themselves anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we find that this gap in people's available information around riding and what you need to do to become a better rider if you're going to go to the gym, there's just not that much information out there. So
it's fit for riding, really, but the website's fit for racing.
And you know what? We really considered changing it and having like a subcategory fit for riding, but then I thought that was a bit wet as well.
Okay.
And do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This type of training isn't for everyone. It is pretty hard.
Yeah.
I didn't want to kind of dumb it down, but... check out the website. There's information on there.
Mm-hmm.
There's these free workouts.
Yeah.
So pick one, have a go at it, stay safe, see how it feels. If you enjoy it, if you're a sadist and you enjoy the pain and you want to do more, then do a few, see how it works for you. Incorporate it into your training that you might already be doing, see how that affects your riding. If you just want to jump in straight in the deep end, get onto a program, then you'll soon understand that everything is scalable. So where we say do a pull-up, we have options around all the way down to what we had some lady from Canada who's in her mid-50s. She'd never been to a gym before and she wanted to get better at riding. It's like, oh, is this going to be appropriate for her? And the feedback was, everything's so scalable. I can do what the pro athletes do, but just a different version.
Yeah.
Relative intensity is the same because she was on her ass afterwards, but she could do all of the movements, and that's what's important.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I was off on a tangent again.
No, that's all good. So yeah, fitforracing.com.
Fit for Racing. There's some fun videos on YouTube, Fit for Racing. Instagram at the moment, I'm finding way better than the other platforms.
Okay.
Because we can fit into a minute video what we're calling Insta bangers. So what we're finding, like generally, if someone asks a question, we expect that a lot of people would benefit from the answer. So we'll smash out sometimes entertaining, sometimes very informative videos around common issues.
Okay.
But for this one, the common issue, dorsiflexion, we will spend a fair amount of time to make it very visually relevant for riding so you can see the benefits with some progressions through. So there'll be high value in this video.
Cool.
So I'd seriously recommend going and checking it out.
Nice one. Yeah, we'll stick links to all of that in the show notes so people can find it.
Perfect. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks, mate. It's been good to catch up.
Yeah, that seemed like about 10 minutes.
Goes quick,
next,
eh?
Next time, I promise I'll have less caffeine. That's when I'm sensitive to it.
This is it. Yeah, it's the fat stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Nice one.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Cheers. Take care, man. All right. That's it for this episode with Johnny Thompson. I hope you've enjoyed listening and you find it useful. Huge thanks to O'Neill and Fit for Racing for supporting the podcast. For the video on ankle mobility and loads of other really useful stuff, head to fitforracing.com. That's fit, then the number four, then racing.com. You can also check out their programs, and as a downtime listener, they're offering 50% off your first month until the 29th of November by using the code DOWNTIME50 at the checkout. That's downtime, all lowercase, followed by the number 50. Also, head over to O'Neill.com and check what they have to offer. If you want to be in with a chance to win one of 10 pairs of legacy pants, then join our mailing list before the end of October by heading to downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. And don't forget to check your junk mail for the confirmation email. If you've got a couple of minutes, then leave us a review wherever it is that you listen to the podcast. Give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to help support the podcast, then you can go and get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies by heading to our shop, which is at downtimepodcast.com/shop. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, get out and ride.